Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Oh, Adam. One of those weeks.
Sure is, pal.
I don't want to start the show with poop material, but...
We usually save that for mid-roll, right?
Yeah, right. We break in the middle of the show. Uh-huh. You're a man who's in conflict with the other end of his body, oftentimes.
Constant conflict, Ben.
I've been having a bit of a week like that.
Hmm.
Makes me empathize.
I accidentally had cheese last night.
What, did you slip and fall into some feta?
Well, sometimes you'll get a salad with some cheese in it, and that's not like an above the title thing that is in the description of a salad. And so I had a little bit of a cheesy salad or a cheesy dressing to go along with it, and I'm still feeling it.
I'm sorry, dude.
What happened to you? Are you just, is this a food-related thing or a stress-related thing or a...
See, the thing, I know I shouldn't envy you, but the thing I envy
almost
about...
almost goes with that saying.
The thing I envy about you is that you often can trace causality to a specific thing you ate, and I never can. Like, sometimes I'll have sick booty, and it's just... a total mystery why that happened.
That booty's so sick.
One of my favorite things that, not to just say a joke somebody else said, but one of my favorite things John Gabers ever said is when it takes a dump, it's like them emptying the crab pots on Deadliest Catch.
Was that the Craps and Craps episode he did a while ago?
I think he said that on a live episode of Doughboys. But I have to go back to make sure. I had a day like that, and I was laughing while committing the act because I had gotten up from watching an episode of Deadliest Catch to do it.
It's such a genius description because of the wetness.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a, like, I have to disrobe and take a shower now kind of situation.
Oh, God.
But enough about my butt, Adam. I have a stack of Star Trek Deep Space Nine trading cards in packages here in front of me, and I am kind of hankering to open these.
Yeah, let's talk about things that are stuck together instead of instead of popcorning, I guess.
Instead of things that are loose.
Right.
The game is five cards stud. The game is exceedingly simple. Part of this is just the card data.
Time to pluck a pigeon.
Ben, I've got nine packs left, and I'm going to propose that we just blow through them all.
Oh, shit.
What do you think about that?
Trading card binge. All right, let's do it. Hell yeah. I got a really good quality card with Morn on the front here.
That's a good start.
From The Emissary Part 2. Just a nice seated Mona Lisa portrait of Morn.
I got Paradise on the cover. It's the story of O'Brien and Sisko and that hot box.
Uh-huh.
And the lady with the lubricant.
That lady that wants to be Gosherin?
We should be writing the episode capsules for Netflix. Paradise, an episode about a hot box, a lady with some lubricant.
Yeah, what we need is like a high power shit kicking Hollywood agent to kick down the door at Netflix and say, "I got two young up and coming talents, but what they really want to do is rewrite some captions for you guys."
How'd you like to be on the ground level of something no one cares about?
I got an Allies and Aliens, an enemy character, name of Wayoon.
I'm cracking these cards when I open them, and it sounds like cracking knuckles. They're getting more and more stuck together.
Well, it's hotter now. Maybe it's the humidity in the air.
Whoa, Ben, I got a special card.
Really?
It is, I would say it's double thick, and it has got a see-through panel of it. It's Terry Farrell as Lieutenant Commander Jadzia Dax. It's one of those, like, you hold up into the light, and then you can see it, what looks like film.
Wow.
Like
is it a piece of film? Is it a cell of film from the show?
It can't be, because it just looks like an 8x10. Like, it looks like a portrait.
Oh, but you could tease it out of the card and go take it to a photo studio and have them develop it for you?
It's a landscape aspect card. It just says the complete Star Trek Deep Space Nine gallery, and it's G5 is the name of the card.
I would say the only remarkable card in this pack that I just opened is for an episode called Trials and Tribulations, and it's a shot of Quark with a tribble on his head.
On his head?
Yeah.
Well, that's...
Isn't that just hilarious?
That's ample real estate.
Dude does have a melon.
Oh, I got a Worf card in here. Worf in an episode called By Inferno's Light. Sometimes I forget that Worf is on the way to this show.
Worf is like the only thing keeping me going, man. We gotta get to Worf.
I know. Things will be better once Worf gets here, right?
Yeah, things will be better once Worf gets here. That's one of the main things about Worf. The two packs I just opened each contain three cards on repeat. Three of the same cards. Prophet and Lace, The Ship, and The Alternate. I got two copies of each of those from just the last two packs I opened.
I love The Ship.
Yeah, it's like a Seinfeld episode.
I have Allies and Enemies, Locutus of Borg.
Whoa. Would not have expected him, but I guess in the Emissary Part 1, he plays kind of a role.
Yeah. Yeah, he's in that episode. And introducing Locutus of Borg.
Ladies and gentlemen, a man who needs no introduction.
He's like babies who get cast. Like, Locutus of Borg is played by Tony and Eric Stewart.
Yeah, the union rules mean that the kids can't be on set for as long. So you always cast twins.
Got a card for the Begotten here. The picture for the Begotten is a Bajoran mom holding up a Bajoran baby who is covered in birth goo.
Ew.
Tells a story. These cards are falling apart as I pull them apart.
Yeah, the ink from the front tends to stick a little bit to the back. That's the problem.
It's like buying a new car. As soon as you drive it off the lot, it's losing value.
Losing
I think
value.
As soon as you open these cards, they're losing value.
I mean, it's arguable that they had value to begin with, but...
How many packs you got left?
I have three left.
I have four, so I better get going.
Ooh, Allies and Enemies. Michael Eddington, an enemy. This is a fellow with male pattern baldness in a kind of a loose fitting t-shirt and then a motorcycle jacket over it. Where are you going on that motorcycle, Michael Eddington?
I got a card that looks like the box art. It just says Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and it's a smiley Avery Brooks, and then in sort of like a Sears Portrait Studio.
Dude, I have effect, the same card.
There's Colomini over his shoulder.
Oh, I have that, but with the space station over his shoulder.
Card number one. That's what this card says.
Wow, congratulations.
And I also got a silver Ships of the Dominion War card. This is card S4. Looks vaguely special.
I don't think I've had... this costume card, I feel like, was a lie.
God, I want that costume card real bad.
Because, like, where is it, if not here?
God, I keep getting the Begotten and the Goo Baby.
Ew.
I've gotten, like, 4 Goo Babies.
No more Goo Babies cards. Oh, my goodness. I got one for an episode called Wrongs Darker Than Death or Night. And it's a very revealing ball gown or something on Kira. Like a slit that goes up to her hip, basically.
Doesn't sound wrong to me.
Pretty enticing image there. She looks kind of pissed off, though, in that way that only she can.
It's part of why I like her.
All right, second to last pack here.
Oh, I got Gul Dukat as an ally and enemy.
I got another one of these goddamn tribal cards.
A lot of repeats as we get to the end here.
Yeah. Hey, I got one for the Mayquise Part 2. That's next week's episode.
The thrilling conclusion to the Mayquise Part 1.
Ships of the Dominion War, Klingon Bird of Prey. Nice foil card. Unlike the Romulan ship that I unwrapped recently, this one's actually facing toward camera. So that's cool.
That helps.
All right,
down to my last pack.
As am I.
Hoping to get something that beats the gallery card for Terry Farrell. Otherwise, that is as good as it gets. Boy, there are some episode titles here that rival Discovery for pretension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Treachery,
sure.
Faith, and the Great River is one of the episode titles here. Oh, I've got Morn as an ally.
Whoa.
There's the buddy.
That's a good card.
Hard to beat Morn.
Okay, Adam, we're going to play everybody's favorite game to play with Deep Space Nine trading cards. I have pulled 5 cards out of this last pack, and what you have to do is guess whether the photograph is in focus or out of focus. And if you get 3 out of the 5 right, I will arrange for a 6-pack of beer to be delivered to your house. Are you ready to play?
Ben, this game was so popular the first time around. Mm-hmm. I'm thrilled to be
able... It was the talk of the internet.
I'm thrilled to have another shot at this.
I mean, you did great the first time. You won.
I did great by guessing mostly out of focus.
All right, well, let's see if you can repeat your so far untarnished record. The first card is for an episode called The Search Part 2. It's an image of Odo and, like, a Lady Odo.
A Lodo?
Yeah, talking to each other in a Star Trek cave. She's looking very sad, and he's looking kind of miffed, I will say.
You know, I think you tipped your hand to me by giving me that much detail. If you have expression amounts of detail and how people are looking, I'm going to say that card's in focus, Ben.
Sadly, Adam, that card is not in focus. So that's going in the L category.
Oh, not a good start. Took a good cut there, though.
Yeah. Here's another card. It is for an episode called Honor Among Thieves, and this may be that same Wayoon guy that I had that card for before. Same hair and ears. It might be a different actor in the same loaf, though. I don't know. And there's a couple of guys over his shoulders, but he's addressing somebody off camera.
I'm going to say in focus.
Oh, Adam. Oh, no.
I'm in the hole, aren't I?
You're in the hole. That is an out-of-focus card. And sadly, that means you need to get every single card correct after this in order to win. All right, your next card. Take me out to the hollow suite. This is a great card because it kind of looks just like a straight-up baseball card. It is of Ben Sisko in a Deep Space Nine baseball uniform. Niners. Get it? And he's on a baseball field, and I think Rom is in the deep background in the stands. He might be the only person in the stands.
Well, this is one of the show's most popular episodes, so I'm going to believe that they would have made sure that this one was in focus, Ben.
You are correct, Adam. You're still in the game, and that's Ooh. What I love about you. All right.
Still Second in the 11. Game like an erectile dysfunction prescription drug commercial.
Second to last card. This is for an episode called Sons of Moog, and it is an image of everybody's favorite son of Moog, Worf Roshenko. He's wearing a gold ceremonial Klingon robe. It looks like he may have a suicide knife or something in his hands. A little hard to see, but from the angle. And then he's kind of looking down as though in disgust with something.
How could they do Worf out of focus? I think I've guessed in focus for every card so far, right?
I think you have, yeah.
I'm going to say that Worf, son of Moog, is given an in-focus portrait here. In focus!
No! It's unfortunately an out-of-focus card, Adam.
Ah!
Well, do you want to try and mitigate your loss somewhat by taking a wild swing at the last card?
Yeah, let's do that last card.
Last card is for an episode called Change of Heart. It is Worf and Dax... And it looks like they may be either embracing or grappling. He kind of looks more embrace, but she looks more grapple. And she's got quite a bit of dirt on her face. Her hair is very much out of place. And she looks real effed up. She's in a bad way.
If they are grappling, do you believe it could be a consensual grapple?
I don't know. I mean, anything's possible. Jadzia Dex... open to a lot of shit.
I'm going to say that one's out of focus, Ben.
That is correct, Adam. Well, 2 out of 5. Not a terrible showing, but not enough to win, Adam.
Just give me the summary. How many of those were out of focus? 4 out of 5 were out of focus? If I had just guessed out of focus the entire time, I probably...
Yeah. You would have won if you... Yeah, 4 out of 5 were out of focus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not... Wow. Well, so ends the game.
Yeah. And so ends our supply of these particular Deep Space Nine cards.
Yeah, I'm willing to continue the card bit, but I gotta tell you, only with a different kind of card.
What we need to do is ask the card guys over at Stop Podcasting Yourself. Those guys know everything about trading cards.
Huh. Well, the search goes on. If you have a bead on... superior Star Trek Deep Space Nine cards, shoot us an email, drunkshimoto@gmail.com.
Adam, do you want to get into the first part of a big two-parter that we watched today?
I think we have to. I mean, you can't do the second part without the first, and by the first, I mean Deep Space Nine Season 2, Episode 20, The Maquis, Part 1.
A.K.A. Sisko and Dukat's Excellent Adventure.
Excellent!
How incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Some Cardassians get blown up by a guy with male pattern baldness. Not the guy in the card that I opened up, by the way. Different. It's like in the post-Picard era, Star Trek is taking a hard stand against bald men.
This guy reminded me of male pattern baldness Barkley.
Yeah.
Like he's kind of totally skulking around like a Barkley.
He's got a Barkley vibe. I was like, are they introducing the Barkley of Deep Space Nine?
Right. I'm ready to know that guy.
Yeah, would meet.
I don't want any trouble here, Barkley.
Trouble? Why would there be trouble?
There's some stuff in Ops where like Kira and Dax are kind of arranging the departure of this Cardassian transport. And it made me think about the air traffic control aspect of working on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Kind of surprising that the science officer and like the second in command have their hands on that, you know?
I like it, and it feels like some lived-in careerism happening on screen that you don't get.
Right.
Like, Star Trek is so interested in cramming plot into the show, you know, like rightfully so, that you don't often just get to lay back and watch people do their jobs.
I wonder how much of their day tends to be this. And I sort of wondered, wouldn't there be people that specialize in this? Like the people that drink way too much coffee and just sit there and coordinate ships all day?
Yeah, go up to ops and push tin for your shift.
451, turn left, that is 060, expedite.
I was a little surprised that that wasn't a specialty, given the idea that it was a job, you know?
How bored do you think Dax is after 7 lifetimes of whatever work, whatever careers she has had, whatever careers Dax has had over the years?
Right.
Do you feel like this is a upward career trajectory for her, or a flat trajectory, or what?
Yeah, does the Ankylosaur want different? Is it all about variety? Because that's sort of the implication, right? Like, she bangs weird-looking aliens because just different?
That is a great observation that I'm ready to believe. I don't get a sense of ambitious Ankylosaur out of Dax. Instead, I get just an interest in variety, like you say, both in sexual partners and in career.
Like, she basically calls Kira stuck up in this scene because Kira is grossed out by the men that Dax is interested in.
It's not his fault. Gallimites have transparent skulls.
Yeah, I mean, Kira is kind of shaming her.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the view I want to have with dinner.
Yeah, uncool, Kira. If it wasn't to each his own, then nobody, you know, it's a zero-sum game at that point.
Kira doesn't want to see that brain.
Kira wants to get brain. She don't want to see it.
Indeed.
Oh, indeed.
This ship blowing up is a big problem. And it's one of those problems that is urgent. Like, they're out in a runabout, like, individually scanning every piece of wreckage. All 75 Cardassians aboard the ship are dead. Sisko is totally flipping out because the brass at Starfleet are breathing down his neck.
Do you get the sense that part of the runabout's job is to clean up the debris, too?
Yeah, like, when they first targeted it, I was like, are they just going to, like, phaser it and vaporize it? Because they do show, like, quite a bit of crap floating around the upper pylons.
Lots of times in Star Trek, when a ship explodes, it just turns to vapor.
Right.
And that's it. It's neat to see some particulate left behind.
Yeah.
Some flotsam.
Some realistic flotsam.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sisko is pretty eager to call this an accident and get everybody to stand down, they're alert, and O'Brien and Kira are like, we don't think that there's any evidence that it is an accident yet. And I think it's Dax that kind of zeroes in on this reading she was getting before the ship left, that it was probably not an explosive device, but an implosive device that caused the problem.
Right, but it looked on screen like any other ship exploding. It wasn't like like space folded in on itself and then blipped out.
Yeah, like I guess it imploded something that was holding something in, and then whatever was being held in exploded. So it's a device that's meant to destroy a ship without leaving a trace behind that can be specifically attributed to an explosive. Which is not really like, if you're a terrorist, like, concealing that it was an explosive when you're blowing a ship up is kind of not what a lot of terrorists go for. It kind of lends credence to the idea that the Maquis are like only interested in taking this ship out because it is running guns and for no other reason. They're not trying to make a political statement. They're not doing this with the aim of destabilizing the region or anything. They're doing it because of the very practical thing that this ship does.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting way to distinguish that.
The Maquis did it.
Maquis?
Right. One thing that does not spoil this episode is the appearance of one of Ben Sisko's old friends. It's Cal Hudson.
A.K.A. the history teacher in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures.
So, Bill, what you're telling me, essentially, is that Napoleon was a short, dead dude.
This guy is great. And,
yeah.
Bernie Casey can fucking rock a Starfleet uniform, too.
Shit, dog. He basically, like, nobody has looked better in a Starfleet uniform since Will Riker.
He does wear his comm badge a little low in the chest, and this is an observation that I've had before. If you are even a little bit taller than other actors, if you ride the comm badge lower in the chest, it makes you look giant.
Yeah.
That little bit of force perspective really changes it. And I don't know whether that's intentional or not, but it really makes him look larger than life.
Cal Hudson with the little sprezzatura. He's cutting a little bit of a dash in that uniform. He knows how to wear it. Cal Hudson can get it, baby.
Cal and Ben are friends. Cal and Dax may be closer friends.
Yeah. The implication is that, like, the relationship that Ben Sisko had with Curzon Dax is very similar to the relationship that Cal Hudson had with Curzon Dax, but that Cal is kind of a dog.
Right.
Because he's like, she knows more about me than any woman I've ever met, including my wife. Jesus, Cal.
Either Cal is not very close to his wife, or Dax is very close to Cal.
Yeah.
They go into Sisko's ready room, and Cal just sort of like swings his arm behind him and is like, are you hitting that, Ben? Like, right away launches into it.
Oh, no. She may not be Curzon, but she is Dax.
I don't love that it's just kind of another writerly excuse to re-explain what Dax is. Like, it's fucking, we're on the backswing of season two. We get it.
Oh, I think Cal needs it explained to him, though. Like, I don't think it's just
turning.
He knew
Curzon. Did Curzon not explain it to him?
That's the weird part, right? Is like, it should have been known at that point that the Curzon container was temporary.
I thought that ankylosaur was just a sex thing.
Pretty nifty split diopter here deployed in this office scene, though.
Oh, really?
Foreground Cal, background Ben.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Tastefully done.
Yeah. Very tasteful.
And delicious. There's not even... sometimes you'll get a little bit of a blur in that diopter, and it looks crisply focused. Foreground and background. It looks great.
The line is well hidden.
Yeah.
Where it is in the frame. Good call.
What are you doing now?
Exactly.
I think Cal has a pretty similar job to Sisko in that he's kind of the top Federation guy for an area. He's like, he's not really he's not stationed on a starship. He's like detached to a region of space. And I kind of get the sense that this is the region of space where, like, the, you know, Native American people in that late TNG episode live. Like, the planets that humans and other Federation people were on that wound up on the other side of the Cardassian line when this treaty got put into place.
Yeah, and there's, you know, as chummy as this scene starts, it really devolves into some tension, because what Cal's trying to make clear to Ben is that he can't possibly know what it's like out in the territories that he cruises. Like, this is not, you know, things post treaty, like, aren't great, and the treaty didn't fix what everyone had hoped it would fix. It's actually created a bunch of problems. And Cal makes the case that Ben couldn't possibly know that because he hasn't been out in those territories the way Cal has.
Yeah, it's an interesting scene because Cal starts off just a chill dude that's there for a chill hang and then reveals some like real deep anger about what's happening out in these colonies.
You ever like go out for drinks with someone and the tone just changes like and gets super fucking dark? Like that's what Cal does in this scene in the span of like 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I've experienced that before, and as a conflict-averse person, it's something I kind of live in fear of.
That's why you like to turn down invitations most of the time.
Yeah, fucking A, man. But I don't think Sisko is conflict-averse. Like, he's interested in talking this through and solving this problem because it's looking like, you know, like they, like these are the two guys that are highest, like the highest placed people Starfleet has in the immediate vicinity of the Cardassian border. So it really does kind of fall to them to toe the line and work on behalf of this treaty, whatever their misgivings are about it.
And in the aftermath of the ship explosion, Sisko is sort of bracing for a Cardassian response that Hudson is almost positive isn't going to happen, or at least positive is not going to happen in the way that Sisko thinks.
Did you ever watch The Staircase?
Yeah.
There's
that show's
like a
great
handful of new episodes of that on Netflix. And
did they add to The Staircase?
Oh,
I haven't seen the new stuff, but I saw it a couple years ago.
So there was like a new hearing where they presented a bunch of evidence that like the key witness that the prosecution presented was a total flim-flam man and made up all of the like blood splatter evidence, like totally fabricated his report. And it, like, you know, you watch the thing and then like the prosecutor stands up and says like this was a fair trial and the result should stand and like the jury made a call and you just got to let them make that call, like whatever these guys are saying. And I flipped out. I was like, how can she just sit there and say that when she was in the same room seeing all the same evidence that this guy fabricated all of the shit? And my wife, a actual lawyer, was like, that's not her job. Like, her job is to argue on behalf of the state and of the victim of the murder. And that's what you do. Like, that's how this works. And I think that that's kind of the position Sisko is taking here. He's like, not necessarily 1,000% bought into like the substance of the treaty or anything, but it's the Federation policy. And that's what he conceives of his job as being. And that becomes a division between him and Cal.
And it is a specific conflict about a more general conflict. Cal's contention that it's a bad treaty flies in the face of Ben Sisko's Starfleet idealism.
Right. So the gold shirt that planted the bomb is like reading the mall directory down on the promenade, like looking like, how do I get to the Sky Lounge or whatever? And a Vulcan woman comes up to him to also read the, you know, give the appearance of also reading the directory, but actually to tell him that they've like arranged for transport and he just has to lay low for a couple of days before they get him off the space station. So a co-conspirator.
This Vulcan lady's name is Sakona. And she runs over to Quark's not long after to hit him up about a business arrangement she's trying to make happen.
She is so slick in the mall directory scene and so not slick in the talking to Quark about how to buy a bunch of guns scene.
Right? I thought the same thing.
Like in the writer's room, they really took a hard left when they got to the next scene with this character about what she's all about.
You get decades of Vulcan history believing that you know what Vulcans are like, and then you get one TNG ep where a Vulcan is trying to assemble a death weapon out of artifacts and like the dam breaks and all of a sudden you're getting some really different style Vulcans, and Sakona's one of them.
Yeah, Vulcans who are down to fuck Ferengi.
Yeah,
She doesn't reveal that she's down to fuck immediately, I should say. Like, Cork is putting the moves on, and initially she seems fairly resistant to the idea. But he does arrange a dinner date at which they can talk about this deal.
She's awkward in the way she articulates business, but is also just... She demonstrates that lack of worldliness that looks like she doesn't really know when she's being hit on.
Right. Yeah, but I feel like people know when they're being hit on, right? Like, you act like you don't know you're being hit on to defray how much being hit on you are getting, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't know. I mean, like, also, I sort of wonder, because the scene where she, like, specifically, like, gives him the laundry list of weapons that she wants is at the bar later. I feel like maybe if he hadn't been so smarmy in this first scene, the suggestion would have been, like, why don't we get dinner in a private place? Mm-hmm. But maybe she wants to do it in a public place because she's a little bit worried about what his intentions are.
That's fair. That's in pretty good headcanon.
I don't know. That's me carrying water for the writers more than it is headcanon. So right after this, we see our little terrorist buddy heading to his safe house. And it's some of those, we've met these aliens before. I don't know. I don't remember what they're called, but they've got the kind of like octagonal headdresses.
Right.
And they appear to be working for their Cardassians because one of them does the classic drop her purse gambit. And this is a nice guy, this terrorist. So he stops to help her put the stuff back in the purse. And somebody come hypo sprays him and they drag him out of there.
I mean, he may be a terrorist, but he's not a monster.
He may have just murdered 75 people, but he's not going to let a lady, let her compact mirror roll around on the floor.
Sure. He's still a gentleman.
Yeah, so Sisko heads back to his apartment, and he's like, surprised to find that instead of Jake, there is only Dukat there.
Jake, go. Your son is not here, Commander.
He's rightfully surprised, and Dukat's like, yeah, I mean, I don't want to alarm you or anything, but I was a non-registered stowaway on a ship, and I just, like, sort of slunk my way through the cargo bay and...
And broke into your house?
I don't know whether this says more about how great Dukat is at spycraft or how terrible Odo might be at security.
Right, because at this point, a guy just got abducted. A nefarious villain is in the station commander's headquarters, and Quark is arranging an arms deal. Odo, nowhere to be found. And a ship just blew up.
My first job was in a grocery store, and at every cash register, there was a tiny laminated sheet of little pictures of the president, CEO, CFO, like board of directors of the grocery store company, so that we would know if anyone had come through. Like, so you're on alert for certain people at a grocery store. Deep Space Nine, not prescribing to any sort of grocery store style security.
I had a friend in college who lived in one of the dorms, but was persona non grata at a different dorm. And they had a picture of him at the security desk. So if he came in and tried to like go to somebody's room for a party or something, they would just be like, sorry, sir, you're not welcome here.
If there's one person you need to look out for on Deep Space Nine, and if you could only pick one, it's got to be Gul Dukat, right?
Right, yeah.
Got to be.
Have you seen this man? Sisko is pretty freaked out about his presence here in his quarters and starts like getting on the radio and asking about where his son is. And Dukat's like, hey, man, that's so uncool. I'm just breaking into your house. I'm not abducting your son. He's like really offended.
How dare you? I'm totally feeling him on this too. Like there is honor among thieves and Cardassians, I feel like. And that is that's a step that he will not take.
Yeah, but also like the first thing he said to Sisko is, "Your son is not here."
Like, yeah.
What does he think Sisko is gonna interpret that as meaning?
That's pretty threatening.
I thought it was a very funny scene.
Gul Dukat.
Dukat.
Gul Dukat.
So,
you know, Dukat, I think in previous episodes, has been kind of the face of Cardassia. And in this episode, it's kind of revealed that he is a bit playing his own game. Like, he is not always in lockstep with the Cardassian government's wishes. And sometimes is kind of advancing his own agenda. And I think this episode arc really cements that as being the case.
What I really like about what Dukat is doing and how he's doing it is it feels like a very back-channel Khrushchev-Kennedy relationship developing here, where there is the company line that Starfleet has, there's the Maquis line,
Maquis?
And then there are the people that actually have to operate the machinery, the machines of diplomacy here. Yeah. And sometimes they need to have those conversations secretly in Sisko's apartment, for instance. And I think that's cool.
Cal Hudson has basically told Dukat and Sisko that they're going to flunk history unless they can figure out the whole situation with weapons being smuggled to Cardassians and the Maquis and all of that stuff.
Guys, your report had better be something very special.
Dukat proposes a road trip, and that road trip is...
Yeah, first they go to the Circle K and they meet George Carlin, but then they go on a trip.
Your academic knowledge of this movie is... is frustrating me, Ben.
Do you not have that?
I don't have it down cold, like
you do.
I
fucking love that movie. It's one of my faves. It's on my mountain.
You want to take the lead on leading us through the plot here then?
No. I'll stop. I want to have fun with you, not at you.
No one's ever said that to me before.
Bill.
What?
Strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
There's not a lot of time to do everything that they need to do in this episode. And one of the things that I wish there were time for is just the idea of Sisko telling anyone at the station that he will be taking a runabout with Gul Dukat to parts unknown. Like, because what happens is you cut from Sisko's condo to the runabout, basically, without that intermediate scene that includes the absurdity that connects the two points. And I would have really appreciated the look on Kira's face had like, because Sisko doesn't need to ask. Sisko's the daddy who loans out the car keys on that station.
Right.
But I feel like you got to tell someone where you're going and with who if you're Commander Sisko.
I mean, they got to know where to look for you if you go missing, right?
Right. So that doesn't happen, and you cut to them on the road, and they're headed to the Volan colonies on Dukat's suggestion.
There's some fun stuff in this. Like, one of the things is that all of Dukat's instrument panels have been turned off, so they're just the, like, black screens without any blips and bloops on them, and he takes great umbrage at that.
I love the idea that, like, the runabout is like a driver's ed car with pedals and a wheel on both sides.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and Sisko, like, disengages the passenger side brake.
Yeah. We get some cool Cardassian backstory here, too, because one of the reasons that Sisko says that he doesn't want to turn on the blinking lights in front of Dukat is because, famously, Cardassians have a photographic memory.
Yeah. I mean, that gives a certain scariness to their villainy.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, like, I think there's a ton of work done on what Cardassians are like in this episode. Another thing is that Dukat says that Sisko is like one of the most joyless humans he's ever met. And it's like, coming from a Cardassian, that's insane.
Right.
But also, like, the way Mark Alamo plays it is perfect. He brings just enough joy to be plausible, but not so much that it's like, give me a fucking break. Like, this is a different character all of a sudden.
Dukat clearly doesn't know anything about fuck Bokai. For him to have said that to Ben Sisko.
Yeah, if only. But that's so true, though, right? Like, if they're only FaceTiming each other when a situation is tense and they're trying to, like, resolve it and save face and et cetera, et cetera, Dukat can be forgiven for thinking that Sisko is all business and no fun, and vice versa.
It's, look, it's not unlike the work face you put on at work and the play face you put on when you get home from work. Like, there are different versions of yourself that you allow people to see.
Right.
What I think Sisko takes greatest umbrage in is that, like, Dukat could think that he knows the entire Ben Sisko, and he does not.
He does not. He does not.
Oh, hi, Mark.
But what Dukat does is leans over Ben Sisko's panel and shows him a new Pong game that involves a couple of shuttle-sized Cardassian ships and a Starfleet merchant ship.
There's some set tripping in the demilitarized zone, and everybody has bigger guns on their ships than seem to really make sense.
Right. They seem to have, like, cheat code guns, right? Like, way earlier in the level than you should possibly have them.
Right. And it looks like they're about to come to blows, so Ben Sisko sets off at a zesty warp 3 to go try and get in there and referee this situation a little bit.
We don't have the budget for us getting there any earlier.
Yeah, so instead of them getting there in time, a different unknown Federation ship gets there in time, shoots some Pac-Man blips at the Cardassian bleeps, and bloops them right out of existence.
Yeah, I mean, you really feel the grief when you see that blip away off screen.
Yeah, you just think about all those lives wasted.
You cut from that scene of spaceship murder to a scene in Quark's bar depicting the date that he's on, the date that he believes he's on with Sakona.
Yeah.
And the business dealing that Sakona believes she's having with Quark.
Yeah.
He's got a full spread. He's just got the works going. All of the great Vulcan foodstuffs and beverages are ready for consumption.
He really splashed out.
Sakona's a healthy drinker, too.
Yeah.
Surely knock that port back. Quark's buoyancy here changes quite a bit when, and he almost spit takes when Sakona arrives at the point where it's time to ask for what she wants, business-wise. And it is guns, Ben. Lots and lots of guns.
Guns, phaser banks, photon torpedoes, troop transports, and a number of cobalt thorium devices. My list is quite extensive.
I feel like he should have asked her if she's a cop.
Right.
You know, like, you have to tell me, that's a rule.
And it is, like, it's not just a few guns, it is like a warfighting amount of weaponry here that really takes him aback.
This may be the most erotic thing that has ever happened to Quark, because it's a woman that he is sexually interested in asking him to set up a situation where he's going to be making tons of money on an ongoing basis as she funds her war.
Right.
She says she's got that latinum.
And that's all that needs to be said. He's game.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pale.
A fucking pale.
Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my living state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
We smash cut to Sisko and Dukat kind of barging in on an argument between Gully Vec and some colonists. Like, they're in just some conference room somewhere, and they come in, like, with, you know, information about this attack they've just observed.
Kind of a step up for Gully Vec. Last time we saw him, he was giving O'Brien tips on how to exterminate voles.
Yeah, he was answering phones for the extermination company.
Yeah, and now he's sort of holding court with regard to this Pong game we saw earlier.
I think that Sisko and Dukat hope that this is going to kind of, like, calm the situation down. But what in fact happens is that the Cardassians play a confession video, like a, you know, soldier captured by North Korea confession video, where he says, like, I'm being treated well, and I'm apologizing for my imperialist incursion and killing innocent Cardassians.
And here's today's paper.
Right, yeah. And that's our male pattern baldness yellow shirt guy.
Yeah. A lot is made about whether or not this confession might have been coerced.
Yeah.
But they
that he says he's well treated, and then like 35 seconds later, they bring his body in under a blanket.
My favorite part of this scene is knowing that for the entire meeting, there are two Cardassians holding that body in a cot, like waiting for their cue to enter.
Yeah, like, waiting outside the room, and the secretary is probably sitting there like, what's that? And they're like, don't worry about it.
They're like shifting their weight and like trying to hold with one hand and the other. Like, it's not an insignificant amount of weight to hold for a long time.
Yeah. Cal Hudson knew this guy and knew him to be a farmer, like a guy who was just kind of a salt of the earth, good dude who wanted to continue to live on the land that he's lived on for 20 years, but now it's owned by the Cardassians. And
in spite of him having the name of a serial killer, like they always call him William Patrick Samuels.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a good look. You never want three names when you die, Ben.
No, that's bad. That's not a good look.
You're probably going to get three names when you die, though. Benjamin R. Harrison sounds like a serial killer.
Yeah,
if it
but
makes
my middle
the news.
Name's made up.
Yeah.
If I kill somebody, they'll use my real middle name.
Well, I would hope so.
But I don't think they're going to do that because I'm probably not going to kill somebody.
Yeah. Too much work.
This is driving a wedge further between Cal Hudson and Sisko. And he leaves and goes back to Deep Space Nine with his good time buddy, Gul Dukat. And Gul Dukat is like, yeah, I knew that they'd killed that guy. I knew all about that shit. Like, I've been lying to you about what I know the entire time.
Ooh, that's got to be so irritating. But this is classic Dukat, right? Like, this is the Dukat you think you were going to get the whole time.
Right. And I think there's a line in this episode that, like, the Cardassians never show you, like what they're showing you is never what's really there.
Yeah.
Or whatever. It's a little bit akin to the always a game of chess with the Romulans line.
Yeah.
Like, I like the summing up a species that does, because, like, the Cardassians are a bad guy alien, and knowing what kind of bad guy they are helps you, like, think about what their role will be.
You're right, Ben. Stereotypes are very useful.
Mm-hmm.
It is discovered by O'Brien.
I am Chief Miles Edward O'Brien. This is fucking spectacular.
And others. Feels like way late in the episode that the implosion device was a Starfleet design.
Yeah, indeed. And
and Sisko already knows this. He doesn't need to be told by O'Brien. He is flailing at this point. Having just gotten off of the runabout, he walks into his office where Kira is there to meet him. And they have an interaction that feels pretty heated.
Yeah, and it's kind of the fight that they've always had.
I feel like Sisko here doesn't even care that Kira is in the room. He needs to monologize this. He needs to just get this out, this pressure that's built up in him. He's got to he's got to say this shit about Starfleet.
He's kind of holding on to his faith by a thread, you know?
They get into a fairly heated argument about the status of the mission, and then at the end, Sisko reverse Lowers her.
I totally thought about Matt Lauer.
Like, he fucking hits a button on his desk, and the doors open.
Opens the door.
Yeah, the implication being, oh, Kira, I didn't know you were there. You may go.
Yeah, I think in Starfleet, you have the button that opens the door, but no button to close the door.
Yeah.
Because any kind of security or locking mechanism is unknown to them.
Right.
it's the fight they've always had. It's the, like, don't trust the Cardassians. Don't think that a treaty is going to make them good guys. Don't think that they're going to become allies after this. And he does not need to hear that right now. Like, his seeing his friends and Federation citizens slip away from him, and that kills him.
It's a good scene for Avery Brooks. It's a good scene for Nana Visitor.
Like, yeah.
I like it when they're heated up at each other. It's good TV.
Yeah, it's good TV, and it's followed by a scene where Gul Dukat gets abducted from his apartment. Like, they come and say, hey, there's some Cardassians here, and Sisko wants you to see them, and we're going to go to an airlock and meet him. I was kind of ready for them to just, like, shove him into the airlock and depressurize it and blow him out into space. Alien queen him.
With how these
Maquis
terrorists look, I was expecting them to sign Dukat up for extension courses at the local community college.
Hey, have you ever considered doing summer stage Shakespeare stuff? Any of that
it's
appeal
hard
to you?
To take them seriously when they all look like adjunct professors, like wearing woolen sweater vests.
Yeah, and like way too baggy of pants.
Yeah. They clearly live in the wood-paneled apartments of Deep Space Nine.
They all have elbow patches, and
but they really kick Dukat's ass here. Shoot him in the back. They get him.
Yeah, I mean, he attempts to knock them all out. Like, he fully punches the Vulcan lady in the face, which is, you know, a little bit upsetting, but I guess in the context can be
that forgiven. Would really horrify male pattern baldness Barkley.
Yeah, but he dead.
Yeah.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
Evening, everybody.
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
I think the next scene is Sisko getting the ass chewing that he totally deserves from the Starfleet brass. Like, everybody's in ops watching him through the window just get yelled at on FaceTime.
I love this.
Yeah, and he comes out, and it is like a full, like, shit flows downhill scene where he's standing up at the top of that landing, just yelling shit at all of them, like, Odo, review all of our security procedures. This is some fucking bullshit. Kira, where are these Maquis? What's going on? Like, where's the ship that Dukat is on? Like, how do we find it? And they narrow it down to, like, there's one potential ship that he's on, and it's like a by any means necessary situation. They're going to go get their dude back, even though he's a bad guy and not really their dude.
The Dustbuster Club they assemble is Sisko. It's Kira.
The heavy hitters.
And it's Bashir, who, the moment he appeared on screen, made me say, oh, it's Dr. Bashir.
Remember that guy?
He's in this episode.
I mean, I guess he's there in case Dukat's been injured.
Yeah, I think that's smart. Their chances of it being a good mission are increased with Bashir on the team instead of O'Brien, who has had a run of really bad luck lately. He's like the black cat you don't want to bring in the runabout.
Right. Yeah. He's like when you're like down a point and this batter comes out onto the plate. Everybody's like, fuck, come on. Like, why did he have to be the next in the lineup?
That you just described my entire junior high baseball career.
It me, Adam.
Ben, when they beam down to the Class M asteroid, it is revealed to be the Arsenal of Freedom playset.
Yeah, they head to a region of the Cardassian border called the Badlands. And it's not that bad of lands. It's very lush. You know, Ace Garden Center exploded onto this planet.
Looks pretty humid, though. You got the fog machines turned up a little bit.
Yeah. But the second they beam down, like, there's guys running around with rifles, and they get the drop on them. It's not just Maquis that get the drop on them, Adam. It is Cal Hudson, out of uniform.
Cal making a Locutus-like entrance, stepping into frame. The show failing to give us the dun-dun-duns of a Best of Both Worlds Part 1. But the episode ties up into this crescendo in a to-be-continued.
A TBC. Fun one. Did you like the episode, Adam?
It's hard to commit, given that this is just Part 1. But I do like what I'm seeing when we talk about shading the Starfleet universe here. Like, I like that there's some inter-Starfleet conflict.
Uh-huh.
I love Cal. Like, give me more Cal. That guy's great. Like, yeah,
Cal Hudson, A+ character.
Like, if a character can make an episode great, I will go see Cal, as the car commercial goes.
Here's a 71 Pontiac Firebird. The full price, $900.
He's a delight. And his relationship with Sisko as being an undergirding of the greater conflict throughout is great storytelling. I love it. I love that there's a little bit of personal and a little bit of professional going on here. And it's got me interested in seeing the second half. What about you, Ben?
Yeah, I really like the episode. I think that it's setting up a challenge that kind of goes to the core of Sisko's values. And that's the episodes of TNG that do that for Picard are always great. And it's like a good formula, you know, like force a character to confront their own beliefs and, you know, tell us whether there are four or five lights.
Yeah.
And I think that it also just puts, like, I mean, we knew about the Mayquis from TNG, and I think that this may be the first time they are, in terms of the timeline of the show, the first time we hear about the Mayquis anywhere in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
But it's fun to put, like, a new villain on the board. So, I liked it.
Then it's decided. We like it. Ben, you want to see if we have any Priority One messages?
Getting a boner for Priority One messages.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we've got a personal Priority One message here. It's from Rick and Annie. It's to Allie and Emily. It goes like this. What a cliffhanger. Hudson was a Mayquis?
Mayquis?
Shocker. Thank you, Allie, for introducing us to this pod, Emily for tickets to the Cleveland show, and both of you for being cool sisters with close birthdays. We're in France looking for some vintage Chateau Picard and avoiding an angry man shouting, Gera Nerys is a war criminal! Anyways, happy birthdays. It's a double birthday.
Boy, am I ever glad that you got to read that, Ben. And what a great message. Like, I love ones that are timed specifically for the episode that we watched. That's good planning by them.
Specific episode, specific timing on the birthday as well. That specific takes some planning.
Bad French accent. I'm going to say good French accent, Ben. I think you do a particularly great one.
You little so-and-so.
Our second Priority One message is of a personal nature. It is from Andy. It is for Ben and Adam. And the message goes like this. Hey, Ben and Adam, I've got nothing funny to say, so please can you do an impression of what you think Morn would sound like? Thanks. This sounds like a very review formatted question, right? Like that Comedy Central show review.
Uh-huh. Andy Daly.
Yeah, which is one of the great shows ever made.
Show. Yeah,
but like often those propositions are phrased in this way. Like you think I'm going to ask you about this, but instead I'm going to ask you about this.
I'm so curious, Ben, about cocaine. Why don't you do it, develop a problem, and then tell me about it?
What do you think Morn sounds like?
I mean, he's a Muppet, so in my head he's got a very like Jim Henson or Frank Oz kind of voice, like
Sweetums.
Quark, would you come over here and give me a drink? Like something like that?
Yeah, like in the Muppet universe, he's got like the bottom hinged mouth.
Yeah.
That opens up like a drawbridge. And so there are certain voices associated with the drawbridge mouth. Yeah. And I think Super Deep is probably where it's at, but also I think it wouldn't surprise me at all if he had a very high-pitched nasally voice like one Adam Pranica even.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, it could be like more up here. Quark, check out this dick.
I love that he would be a henchman from Venture Brothers. That's awesome.
I'm not really familiar with that program.
That should totally be what he sounds like.
I mean, I kind of feel like I'm doing a voice for my dog, you know, in a way where like I'm putting something on his personality that he has no way of defending against. Right.
I could see, you know, he moves around so slowly. I could see him being a real Eeyore type too, you know.
Sure.
Like it takes him 1,000 years to get out his drink order, like, "Hey, Cork, could you please get me your menu?"
That's just probably what your Kevin Uxbridge sounds like when somebody who customarily listens to our show on 2X listens to it at regular speed.
Well, if you're listening on 2X,
you're wrong.
I'm no fan of yours. Yeah, if you're interested in sending us or any of our viewers a Priority One message announcement, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
You sure can. It's $200 for a commercial message and only $100 for a personal message. Helps us cover the costs of creating this podcast.
Gotta get that gold press light. Get that
gold press light.
Am I right?
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
It's Cal. There are probably more Shimoda-like people if we're using the greatest gen dictionary definition of what a Shimoda is.
Uh-huh.
But I don't get the feeling that Cal's going to be long for this universe. And so while I can, I want to recognize Cal with the Drunk Shimoda. I mean, he is a chaos agent, but he's masquerading as big Starfleet.
Right. Yeah, he's chaotic neutral in lawful good clothing.
Yeah, and I really like that. You don't get that too often in a Star Trek show, and he really lives in that role very well. Like, what's great about him is that when he bursts onto the scene, he is 1,000% charisma, and so you love him right away, which is what makes the surprise at the end so painful. Like, ah, oh, not Cal. Like, yeah. Even though it telegraphs the turn, like, fairly early on, too, I think it hurts because you like him. You don't want him to be bad, but he is.
If you don't love this character, this doesn't hit as hard as it does, but he really makes you love him.
Yeah, if he is just a neutral party, if he is just Joe Starfleet, old Ben Sisko's friend, and you don't really get a read off of him, you don't care at all in that last scene. But I think he does such a great job charismatically early on that works.
And he just has great screen chemistry with Avery Brooks. Like, they really sell that they are old friends that were, like, in the academy together, graduated together, and the betrayal that evokes in Sisko when he finds out where Hudson is actually at politically is all the more impactful because of that.
He's a special guest star. Bernie Casey said that he was not interested in doing Deep Space Nine, but he did it so that he could work with Avery Brooks, who he admired quite a bit as an actor, which I think is a pretty fun reason to do the show at all. Like, I don't know if I feel like doing this, but get to work with that guy.
Yeah, a couple of awesome scenes together.
Yeah. What about you, Ben? Who's your drunk Shimoda?
My drunk Shimoda is Gully Vec, and it is for that scene where he has the guys waiting outside with the body the entire time.
Yeah.
I laughed when that happened, and I wrote it down, like, Gully Vec, that is fucking hilarious.
You know that there's a scene that they won't show where Gullivec is talking to those guys and is like, look, I don't know if you ever watch, like, courtroom drama television, but you're just going to have to believe me. When you burst through those doors, it is going to mean
everything. Have you guys ever
seen
The Staircase?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, respect for Gullivec there for, like, taking the time.
He's got right. He knows how to play it for drama.
What do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is Season 2, Episode 21, The Maquis, Part 2. Sisko and Gul Dukat join forces in an effort to avert a war between the Cardassians and a group of Federation colonists led by Sisko's old friend. And of course, our friends at Netflix always have a way of describing these things as well. And in this case, they describe it as The Maquis Part 2, Sisko, Kira, and Bashir are held in a Maquis camp, but Gul Dukat is not there.
Related to the first one, like, I feel like an easy pitch for any show or movie is, like, what happens when we pair two unlikely allies?
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to get.
Yeah, it's a real, it's like a buddy cop team-up where one is a straight-shooting, fresh-out-of-the-academy rookie, and the other one does not play by the rules, but he gets results.
Indeed, Ben.
Oh, indeed.
Well, that'll be next week. Do you want to find out how, if any way, we will be doing that show, Adam?
Oh, boy. Ben, it looks like we're on square 65.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
65 it is. We could hit a Quark's bar if we roll errantly, or well, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah.
Want me to shake this up and roll it?
Why don't you?
Olivery!
Shit, Adam. I rolled a 3.
Drink is the antidote.
That means our next episode is from the vantage point of Square 68, a Quark's bar.
Oh, goody.
Do you know what you might be drinking for that episode, Adam?
Well, I think I do. Like, I have a great idea of what I'll be drinking.
We've never done this. Like give the people ahead of time a thing to drink along with. Do we want to go out of our way and do that?
I'm planning on drinking some Casamigos Mezcal, which is my new favorite mezcal from our pal George Clooney. I didn't think that I would.
Well,
love
it's formerly of George Clooney, right? Didn't he sell it for $4 billion?
Did he divest? His signature's on the label.
I think he sold it for like a shit ton of money. And
oh, man.
A year or two ago.
Gotta say, even if he's out of the game, what remains is a very tasty bottle. So I think I'm at least going to start with that, then probably back it up with a couple beers.
Right on.
What about you?
I could do that hang. I've got a bottle of Bozal Mezcal that I shared a glass of that with you when you were here, and I've been really enjoying that. So maybe I'll do the Mezcal and Mexican import beer hang as well.
Yeah, that Bozal is great stuff. So yeah, that's all by way of saying we are not angling for a sponsorship, but if you work at a distillery that produces fine mezcal, I don't think we would kick any of that out of bid.
No, we would fuck the shit out of that mezcal. All right, that'll be the next episode. In the meantime, you can talk to us online. There is the Greatest Gen hashtag on Twitter, where Adam is at Cut for Time, and I'm at Benjamin R, AHR. Think twice before you click send, because we are humans with feelings, and things that only seem mildly insulting to you come across as very insulting to us sometimes.
Yeah, there's such a thing as being too familiar, I think. Yeah. I think one other thing I want to say, we do also have an email address. It's drunkshimoda@gmail.com. I think I'm going to pivot that into a message that goes like this. We read every email that comes in there, but no guarantee of a reply given the volume of messages that we get there. We appreciate all the kind things that people say and send to us there, but
yeah.
It is, I recently cleaned out 600 messages that were in there, and now I think we're getting close to that again. It's just a giant, giant thing, so.
It's fairly relentless, and that is, like, please do not take it personally if we can't get to it. It's just, like, not enough hours in a day kind of an issue.
Yeah.
And we'd like to focus as much of our time as we can on making a really fun podcast, so. Thank you for everybody that sends stuff in, and especially if you have thoughts that you'd like to share about the show or just a personal experience you want to relate. We do read all of it, so thank you. There's also a Facebook group and a Reddit sub, and I think like Slack channels and Twitch channels and things if you want to get into the hangs online. There's also a Maximum Fun subreddit that there's a thread about every show on, and I think that's also a fun place to hang out with non-dicks on the internet.
If you haven't left Twitter yet, our card daddy, Bill Tilly, at Bill Tilly 1973, makes super fun cards for every episode that we do on the show, so make that a part of your enjoyment of The Greatest Generation, won't you?
And if you enjoy The Greatest Generation, why not go over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a nice review? Those reviews help us find new viewers, and more viewers means more touring and more time that we can spend on the program.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which pairs one host straight out of the Academy, who's a straight shooter, who plays by the rules, and Ben Harrison, who doesn't play by the rules but gets results.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.